Hello and welcome to the final episode in the first series of The Astroholic Explains.
Oh no.
Yeah. So this is a very special episode, not only for that reason, but for another reason as well. So, Alfredo, what is different?
We're no longer two.
There's someone else with us. We have a special guest today.
I wanted to give the impression that you might be expecting, or I might be expecting.
No.
Okay, no. We're gonna cut this.
No. Okay. So, special guest, introduce yourself.
Hi there. My name's Joshua Leary. I'm a principal engineer working on spacecraft mechanisms at Airbus Defence and Space. And I think I can give a bit of info and shed some light on the topic for today.
Yes, so I'm getting a lot of spoilers about what today is going to be about, and I got the spoilers the moment I saw Josh walk in the house, and I'm just like, so I know. So, I'm going to guess the question today.
You can guess the question.
Yes.
The question comes from Elodie.
Oh, Elo. Hello, Elo. She's old friend.
Guess away.
The question is going to be about space junk.
It is. The question is about space junk.
Yes!
So, Elodie asks, what are the latest solutions to collect space rubbish?
Okay, very interesting.
Hence why we got Josh on board to help you answer that.
Well, he's the expert, so I'm not sure why I'm here, but okay.
Tell us a little bit about what space junk actually is.
So there is a lot of stuff around around the Earth, and now I feel very self-conscious to have an expert next to me that will gonna nod or shake his head if I say something wrong.
Or just jump in and correct him. That would be great.
Should
I give you a shot?
Yeah.
Not sure if I like that. So. But anyway, we'll see. So pretty much since the late 50s, we've been sending a lot of stuff into space. And while some stuff falls back down and burns into the atmosphere, well, mostly burns into the atmosphere, a lot of stuff is still there. And when it stops working, it simply remains space junk. And it is a problem because sometimes these abandon satellites, but there's also a camera. I think there used to be a spatula that was lost by an astronaut.
But just I think floating around.
I think the spatula came back down to Earth, but there is a lot of stuff. And the issue is everything up there, it's moving at roughly 8 kilometers per second, 5 miles per second. So even something like a speck of paint, it's a bullet.
Yeah, in fact, there's quite a famous photograph from the space shuttle where it shows an impact of a speck of paint on one of the front windows, and it's quite energetic.
What does it look like?
It's cracked.
It's cracked.
Yep. Whoa.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so they're dangerous for a good load of reasons, especially for the astronauts in space, I'm guessing. Although, is that film Gravity exaggerated in terms of the damage space junk could do or bits?
I think it's a nice hypothetical about the near future.
Uh-huh.
I think it's displaying something called the Kessler syndrome, where it's an exponential increase. So something generates more debris,
mm-hmm.
The debris is flying around and hits something else, and more and more and more. So it's a very good example both to the safety of crewed missions. So, for example, the International Space Station does have to make collision avoidance maneuvers several times a year.
Wow.
And also just to the general utilization of space as a resource, because it endangers other satellites in low Earth orbit.
Oh my gosh. So it would affect launches as well, I'm guessing.
I'd say the amount of time that the launch vehicles or rockets actually spend sort of traveling through those sorts of environments is mm-hmm. quite limited, so chances are they won't hit anything.
Okay.
But it might affect the type of spacecraft or the orbits those spacecraft will be in. So maybe we'll start putting up fewer Earth observation satellites or whatnot, just because the neighbourhoods where they're meant to be going are polluted and risky.
Yeah, so there are some orbits that are getting quite crowded, and so we need to think of ways to either remove stuff or we need to just use different orbits, but there are some orbits that are extremely convenient to be in.
So let's talk a little bit about some solutions for all of this space junk. What can be done about it? How can we get rid of it? Can we get rid of it? What do we do?
The topic is, people come from quite a few avenues. So the European Space Agency has an initiative called Clean Space, and that's really trying to tackle the whole gamut, in a way, the whole sort of life cycle of a mission. Mm-hmm. So there's now mandatory requirements for spacecraft to consider end-of-life disposal, so to make sure they vacate the orbit they're using. So for low Earth orbit satellites, that means to try and go down back into the atmosphere and burn up. There's, of course, initiatives to try and help the satellites when they're up there, so, you know, autonomous maneuvers to avoid tracked junk.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, every time you don't hit something, it helps you not generate more. The final section is, as I mentioned, for active removal. So actively going up, removing large, risky pieces of debris, and try and remove some of that risk.
Wow.
Josh, what are you working on to help with the topic of space rubbish, space junk?
Right. So at Airbus here in the UK, we've been working over the last 8 years or so on the development of a space harpoon system.
Cool.
We call this ADR, which is active debris removal.
That is very cool. Is everyone dressed up, like, is your boss dressed up as Captain Hackett and being very Moby Dick about it?
No, but the first project manager who was there on the project for a while did have the nickname Captain Ahab. So.
Oh.
Amazing! Okay. This is what I like to hear.
That's what it's all about, really.
Yes.
Yeah.
Professional cosplay.
Of course.
In terms of the size of some of this debris, how big are pieces are we talking? What's the sort of range of sizes?
If I'm correct, the biggest piece is an old European weather satellite.
It is indeed.
That is as big as a double-decker bus.
That's right. Yeah.
Which, you know, it's... Everything like that is big is always compared to a double-decker bus, but this satellite actually is. Yeah.
So this is the Envisat satellite. So it's an ESA mission from a while back now. And it's, in fact, stopped working several years back. I think there was even a suspicion that maybe it had actually suffered an impact from debris, but I think it wasn't proven.
Okay.
So Envisat is currently flying around, I believe, in a polar sun synchronous orbit, so it can make good observations of the Earth at the same locations, same time of day. It's very large, as Alf has said. Because it's very large and has quite a massive cross-section area, it poses a very high risk to other spacecraft in a similar orbit, but also it has a risk of impacting with other debris. So yeah, that's probably the largest thing out there. Of course, and it then scales all the way down to tools from astronauts, so the size of a fist, and then down to paint specs, so kind of 1 millimeter cross-sectional area. I think a lot of this debris is being tracked. Of course, they can't track below a certain size. I believe 10 centimeters in cross-section area is the sort of threshold, and there's several years ago, I think it was reported there was over 20,000 pieces of debris larger than 10 square centimeters. So that's quite,
wow.
It's quite alarming, isn't it?
Yeah, it is very, very, very alarming.
It's like, I can imagine if there's any like data sets of this and visualizing it, it would basically look like Earth is surrounded by a swarm.
Yeah, I think those, you know, when you see those sort of computer generated images and they show the sort of clouds surrounding the Earth, it's not too far-fetched in terms of the distribution, but the sizing is exaggerated.
Yeah.
It's not like in Wall-E, which you just see like loads of satellites just sitting there.
Yeah.
But no, there is so many. That there was an artist project a few years back at the Science Museum, which had this instrument that would play certain notes depending on the type and size of space junk passing over London at that specific time, and it was continuously playing.
Oh,
so it was, and yes, London is quite big, but and so the area they cover in space is quite big, but it's just like there is a lot
Scary.
Yeah, there's a lot of rubbish there.
In terms of things like the satellite and the larger pieces, is anything currently being done to actively remove them?
Yeah, so that's essentially the work that we've been doing over the last 7 or so years. Like I said, we're focusing on active debris removal, and in particular, we're working on harpoon systems. Mm-hmm. So, of course, there's several different approaches you could take. We can think of things like going up and using a robotic arm to grab onto something. You can have a net which fires and captures something.
I think I've seen footage of that.
Yeah. So the net and harpoon concepts have actually been tested recently over the last year or so. I've mentioned Clean Space already, which is where our large harpoon project is funded. We've also been involved in a smaller project called Remove Debris, which is a European Commission funded and heavy involvement with UK Space. And this is essentially a technology demonstrator satellite.
Okay.
It went up. In fact, it went up to the space station and got shoved out of an airlock, which is quite cool. And it has several experiments on it. So it had, in fact, the net experiment. So they ejected a small CubeSat, and then the net fired and caught it. They have Harpoon, so we call it the mini Harpoon, where there's a deployable sort of target panel on a boom, and then it fired and shot and captured that.
How big was the mini Harpoon?
So the mini Harpoon is about 10 to 15 centimeters in length and about 100 grams in mass.
Okay, just if you're listening and you don't know what a CubeSat is, CubeSat is a very small satellite that usually loaf of bread size. Sometimes you can stack them a few in, so that's why the mini Harpoon needs to be that small too.
So that's about 1 kilogram, 2 kilograms mm-hmm. sort of satellite size. And the other experiments were, there was a image-based autonomous visual navigation system to help with satellites doing their own avoidance maneuvers. And the final experiment, and apologies if I've left off something, the final experiment, I believe, was a deployable drag sail. So testing technology for end of life, where you increase your cross-section area, you can degrade your orbit a lot quicker.
Mm-hmm.
Because of course, everything does eventually make its way back down, but the higher you are, the less atmosphere there is, the less drag, and it takes an exponentially longer amount of time higher up. So if you increase your drag, essentially, you'll get down quicker.
Cool. So I have a question. How do you make sure that by shooting the harpoon into something, you're not creating tiny little debris?
It's actually a really good question, and it's probably the comment that we've gotten most back during any sort of PR exposure on the Harpoon projects. We are, of course, very conscious of debris being a project that's trying to remove debris. So the projects involving the Harpoons tend to have quite stringent requirements placed on them from our customer. And these are essentially to prevent generation of new debris. So in fact, for the Harpoon system, there's 4 different subcategories of debris generation. There's generation from the operation of the harpoon, generation from the impact, rupturing the target, and from sort of pulling on the target when you want to deorbit it. Part of the testing we've done over the last 2 years has involved as well trying to assess and measure and characterize how much debris gets generated, and then looking at in terms of the design of the harpoon of how to minimize that. So things like the shape of the barb tip, so square with a conical ogive tip, actually generates the least amount of debris and pedals out the metal skins in a way that doesn't rupture as much.
Wow.
That's very cool.
In terms of the size of these harpoons, you mentioned the mini harpoon being around 10 centimeters long. How big would the larger versions be?
Right, so the larger version for the Clean Space project is, quite a lot larger actually. It's about 1.2 meters long.
Wow.
Compared to 15 or so centimeters, and it weighs 2.2 kilograms. So it's order of magnitude scaled up.
Yeah.
In terms of the type of targets that we'd be going for, mm-hmm. so of course the small harpoon, we'd think about small sats, 1 kilogram, 10 kilogram type of range. The large harpoon has been sized. One of the key targets is, in fact, Envisat.
I was about to ask if is that going to be your white whale?
Indeed, it is the white whale. We've sized it based on a target selection early trade-offs, looking at the I believe it's a scale called the European Weight Measure, which looks at a bunch of family of debris up there, looking primarily at old dead satellites, like Earth Observation family called SPOT, spent upper stage of rockets, so Ariane 4 upper stages. And between those two families, so the SPOT platform and the Ariane 4 rockets, it covers about 70% of the top hit list from ESA, from the European community. Luckily, Envisat does share a lot of the platform with the SPOT family as well, so that enabled us to really try and get as many possible targets as we could. But fair to say that the 2.2 kilo harpoon has been sized mechanically for Envisat.
How far away can these targets be for when they get shot at and pulled back? Is there a limit to the length of the whatever the harpoon is attached to?
Yeah, I think the limit is probably determined mostly by how long the tether is.
Mm-hmm.
So we're dealing here with the harpoon and net, we're dealing with what we call flexible links. So you essentially, you capture, you create a structural link to your target. Mm-hmm. You have a tether, like so a rope, connecting yourself to another spacecraft, which will pull the target back down into out of orbit, compared to, say, a robotic arm, which is a rigid link. The flexible links are a lot more appealing for a lot of targets which might be uncooperative, so spinning, tumbling, where it might pose quite a risk to the spacecraft that you send up to get it. So for the large harpoon, the target distance is about 30 meters.
Okay.
But I think the models that we've tested so far have tether out to about 50 meters.
Wow.
And that's, it's quite a difficult trade-off because, of course, the further you are away, your accuracy suffers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the closer you are, the higher risk to whatever you send up to get there.
And, okay, so forgive me for this mental image now, because am I completely wrong in assuming that when you use these kind of harpoons, it would ideally be, say, for example, an astronaut on the ISS grabs this harpoon, goes out of the airlock, and is like tethered to the ISS with this big harpoon gun that they then shoot? Or is it mounted?
It would be really cool. Oh. Sweetie, literally, it's not like it's not like they're space pirates with a vessel and a harpoon.
You always think of Futurama, you know, whalers on the moon.
It's basically what I'm picturing.
No, it's going to be an independent spacecraft that is designed to shoot something, then drag it down.
Okay.
So two answers to the question. The first being that a lot of these systems rely on powerful deployment techniques, so pressurized gas systems or gas generator systems, and the possibility of essentially projectiles firing in the vicinity of human habitation. So for crewed flights, it's quite risky. There's a lot of stringent measures and reviews and safety assessments that are required. For example, that we had to go through with NASA for use of the ISS. And the second answer is that a lot of these targets are actually really quite far away from where we have crewed flight, and that we really do have to go out to specific orbits in specific locations to try and grab and get rid of them.
I think Chris was angling for an answer about how can astronauts injure themselves in space.
But it's one way.
It is, yeah. Although I like the idea that eventually we're going to have astronauts with power. There's going to be so much debris that they need to constantly be on the
machine gun. I imagine explosive decompression.
Wow. So here is where I'm going to go for the last part of this episode. Were you in charge of something in this field? What would your possibly never before thought of answer to space debris be? What would you do to get rid of it?
You see,
realistically,
something that I never hear about, and I'm sure there is probably very, very good explanation for it, is magnets. Because I love magnets. So I'm gonna ask the question and give myself the answer, and then Josh, you can correct me. So you have all this debris out there, and you're worried that your nets might not work well, you're worried about other things, your harpoons creating maybe a little bit more debris, putting the spacecraft in danger. Magnets, you just grab all of them. So the answer that I gave myself while I was thinking about it is, it's probably most of the stuff is not ferromagnetic, because things that are ferromagnetic tends to be a little bit heavier, so it's probably made of lighter materials that you cannot grab with magnets.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, magnets were, of course, in our original trade-off, thinking, you know, just out of the box, what could you use? I think the main reason, probably one of the main reason that it's not feasible is exactly as you said. So in terms of the materials used for spacecraft, there's not a lot of ferromagnetic materials in steel. Steel happens to be quite heavy. Mm-hmm. We have lots of aluminium of various alloys and grades, lots of titanium, and lots of carbon fiber. So lots of not very magnet-friendly materials, as well as other bits. I think, as well as that, the strength of field you'd need to generate would be extraordinary, which I would imagine we'd have some EMC or sort of electromagnetic cleanliness issues as well with other spacecraft who use the region.
Yeah. Okay, I was literally picturing a sort of Scrooge McDuck style spacecraft with a giant electromagnet and just...
the big red and silver one.
Yes, obviously. Yeah. And it's just going around and just cleaning the orbits. Well, stupid physics always ruining the fun for everyone.
I have one thing that pops to mind and almost certainly will not work. Especially because it involves some sort of futuristic AI capability. So you have this autonomous ship that would be in the vicinity of any space debris, and then the AI calculates its location and trajectory, and then using some sort of robotic arm, knocks it in the direction of the sun, and it just carries on going into the sun. Basically, use the sun to burn up everything that we don't want.
I think now it's time for Chris answers his own question on why that is not going to work.
Well, immediately, because you can't really get a ship that does that, and obviously not all debris is going to be on the side of the sun, so there's sometimes the Earth would be in the way, obviously. Also, it would need a hell of a lot of energy in order to knock something away from Earth.
Very good.
Okay, got there in the end.
It's much easier to throw stuff down into the atmosphere
than it is to push it out of orbit.
Yes. No spacecraft currently, or the technology, has the ability to go straight towards the sun. It's quite a lot of energy required to do that transfer.
Oh, okay. Well, no to that idea then.
No, but I like the idea that the issue with catching up with all this debris is the fact that they're moving very fast, you need to match speed, but let's assume that somehow we have this AI power spaceship that has unlimited fuels and can move around. Maybe a solution would be something that can slowly catch up with them and sort of open its...
Like Pac-Man.
Yes, a Pac-Man spaceship there already a plan like that?
I think it's not too far-fetched, to be honest. I think it's just how trying to size that spacecraft for how much it could possibly get to. You know, do you use electric propulsion so you can keep it up for a while and just slowly, you know, like a net in a river, just slowly gather things? Not a terrible idea.
Mm. Thank you, copywriter Alfredo Carpinetti. I don't know, there might be some people listening that can fund...
Patent officers.
Not patent officers, somebody that can fund a mission and just want to put my idea out there.
Okay. It's a good point on funding, though, because that's kind of where we are right now. Space debris is obviously, it's been known about for a while, but maybe only taken seriously in the last decade or so. And funding is really the key in terms of who has the responsibility to deal with what is a shared resource. Obviously, there's no owned airspace by any sovereign nation, but everyone uses it. Space in terms of orbits is also not like fixed airspace, so there's no I have over there, you have over there. So it's why I think there's a big push at the moment to try and instill responsibility into satellite manufacturers and customers to say, you need to think about this, you need to put measures in place for the end of your mission to try and keep space clean, essentially.
So if you're making satellites, please think about the end of your mission. And if you have the money to make satellites, if you want to sponsor the Astrolic...
Nice.
Well, it's the last episode. Let me try to squeeze something. But no, that was very, very interesting. And I think it's very important that is that this remains a conversation every time we talk about new missions around Earth and big new projects.
Yep.
That's great. No, I think I learned a lot, and that was a lot of fun to talk about as well. Thank you, Josh. Thank you for being our special guest.
It's been a pleasure, and thank you for inviting me to have a chat.
You're welcome. It was great to have three for one episode for a change. So,
and thank you again, and I hope Elodie this answer your question. See you next season.
We don't know when we'll be back, but we'll be back in about 6 months.
Yes, we will be back.
So, in the meantime, keep sending in your questions, and hopefully we'll have a massive stockpile by the time the next season starts, and we will get back to you with some more special guests as well. So take care, and we'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.